This is Rocky Mountain Voices, powered by PodTech.
Gartner's report says that about 80% of all corporate information actually sits on the desktop. So these companies are receiving a subpoena almost weekly to go through and actually find and produce documents related to some subject matter. Not only is that expensive, if their employees haven't followed through and actually cleaned up, then they even are at more risk.
This is Rocky Mountain Voices, and I'm Kip Meekum. Today we are here interviewing Sydney Tetrow, Vice President of Marketing for Salt Lake City-based NextPage. Sydney, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Good morning, Kip.
Why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself to our listeners and introduce NextPage along with that intro.
Okay, great. I'd love to. So I'm Sydney Tetrow. I've been with NextPage actually for about 6 years, which is quite a long time in today's work environment.
That's like two lifetimes, two full gigs.
And actually, we've kind of had two iterations of the company over the course of that time. So it's actually been a great place. Before that, I worked at lots of other places like Novell and WordPerfect.
And what business is NextPage in?
We call it the desktop document management. And specifically, right now, we're focused on document retention. Consistently, as we work with companies, we've kind of always had this model where as we come up with a product idea, we take it on the road and we validate it. And we try really hard to be very customer driven. So we have a very parallel customer development and product development process.
And you're doing this before products are released to the general market?
Even actually at the prototype phase. We'll spend like 3 months on the road. We'll go out and we'll do 20 or to 30 plus interviews with different companies that don't really know anything about us and test the product to validate that we can actually make money with the product before we go invest all of the development money. So that's really been our focus, which has driven all of the product development out of the organization over the last couple of years. We've done a number of cycles of that. And about a year ago, we had introduced a product called Collaboration into the market, and we started taking it into some companies. And they said, hey, because you already know everything that's happening on the desktops, you're tracking document versions as they sit on hard drives, as they float in email, as they get stored on key drives, as they're on servers, can you now not just extend that to solve our problem of retention, which for them means reduce the liability we have of risky documents that sit on the desktop and the intellectual property that goes along with that. And so we started co-developing our latest product with those companies. And that's really been about the last 9 months. And we introduced it in a controlled release form in early summer. And then we will actually do our formal GA of that in Q4.
So you had a press release this week that kind of speaks to this. And I believe the subject line of the release was that corporate document retention was failing at the desktop. So this is the business problem you're solving. Talk about that press release or the information that you found out and why that's important to the marketplace.
As you can well understand, over the last couple of years, we have a whole bunch of organizations that have a lot of risk with the types of documents they create. You know, since the fall of Enron and various others, people are getting very strict about the practices of data that sits in their organization. And that can include email, but it also includes documents. And we're really focused on the document side. Gartner's report says that about 80% of all corporate information actually sits on the desktop. And so by sitting on the desktop, which is the edge of the organization, which is typically a very uncontrolled environment of an organization. I mean, how many documents do you create, save them on your desktop, put them in email, put them on a key drive?
The wild, wild west of IT.
That's right. But that's the part where the risk comes. So these companies are receiving a subpoena almost weekly to go through and actually find and produce documents related to some subject matter. And that's, not only is that expensive, but if their employees haven't followed through and actually cleaned up what's happening on the desktop, then they even are at more risk. You know, so let's say a working copy said a specific valuation about a company, but the final recommendation had that increased, right? And there was a discussion. That information, if not appropriately taken care of, becomes discoverable and therefore creates those risks that we continue to see before various courts in the country about, you know, did you follow those policies? Did you do a reasonably good effort? And what we found is that employees, although they really want to try to comply with those, they don't actually have any tools to do that. So the stats are like 62% of all of the companies actually have document retention policies in place, but that still leaves about a third of all companies who don't even have a written retention policy in place. Only 31% of those companies that have them actively enforce them.
So it's fair to say, as with most corporate policies, they start in writing, well-intentioned, perhaps maybe not as well thought out as they need to be, but then the challenge for these organizations is converting from a written policy to actually making something that works, fits into the workflow of an individual, and that there are technology tools to help them to be able to comply with a corporate policy. That's the problem you're solving.
That's right.
Okay.
The only way to start solving that problem was to force everyone to go centralized. So everyone put your stuff on a shared drive, because I know how to apply policy if you store stuff in the center. But that actually doesn't work, and we have years of research on that. And the reason it doesn't work is because users are ad hoc. They're mobile. They're working all over the places. They're not always in your office, and they have to store stuff locally. They can't actually save stuff up into a shared drive all the time. It just doesn't work. There are companies who have tried it with things like Citrix, Metaframe, and it works in environments where you don't have mobile workers that are professional people trying to solve problems for other companies.
For the draconian, big iron, high level of control, highly centralized. One scenario that comes to mind, you talk about mobile workers. If I'm untethered from the corporate network while I'm working on things, I assume that the product still keeps track of stuff. Do you have some synchronization stuff going back on when people hook back up? Are you able to traverse the internet cloud if someone is working on a document while they're logged in at a hotel or a Starbucks or whatever? Talk about a little more about the mobility aspect.
I'll give you a little bit of background about how the product works. So what actually happens is there is a lightweight client that gets installed on the specific desktops. And what that does is from the very first time someone creates the application and saves it, it gets tracked. And all derivative work of those documents then get tracked. And we've worked really hard to make sure it doesn't change how the users normally work. Most of the time, on first save, you'll see a prompt that lets you classify it with kind of two fields. And then as long as you're working on that version or those subsequent versions of that document, you'll actually never see the next page document retention interface come into there. It's just going to automatically
track.
It just works
behind the scenes.
You click send, you create an email, you send as an attachment. It knows that you sent an attachment. It knows if you renamed it, doesn't matter what you rename it to. It just tracks all of those across the entire distributed infrastructure of the organization. A key drive, your email, your hard drive, or a server. And so it can display for you a picture that tells you exactly how many copies of which versions of those documents exist in any of those locations. And then for those companies, what it lets you do is then, and it does it whether you're offline or online. So if I happen to be one of those guys who is sitting in a customer office for a week, or you know, I get to the internet nightly, that's just fine, because it still knows exactly how to understand things are derivative work. When you come online, it will verify with the global service exactly how that fits into the ultimate picture of any given document. And then it can just deliver that information so that then you can go through whatever your retention policy is, say, purge all of these working copies so that they don't exist anymore, and save these ones to the centralized server. And now the project or whatever that engagement is actually closed out, and you have the complete record of all of where all documents are. If you fail to delete them, I know that. If you leave the company, your hard drive gets stolen, which is a common issue right now across those guys.
An inventory of what was taken.
Exactly. We know exactly which documents were there.
You talk about the legal discovery process and you know how your technology works there. Talk a little bit more about some of the other markets that you serve, ways that people are using the product, using the technology to accomplish business purposes.
So investment banks, tax and audit guys, management consultants, and then outside of those fall the categories of energy, because those guys have lots of retention issues and are highly regulated environments. So those are kind of the main categories that are either customers or that we're focusing on. Their applications are all fairly similar, meaning they usually have project or engagement teams that have some kind of defined thing that they're going to work on. And a couple of the customers that we're working in, they actually have applications where engagement work can get stored. And we are actually the thing that's going to track files from the very beginning. And then when they go to close out a project or an engagement, our technology then gets invoked because it did all of its work previously. And in their current environment, like 30 to 40% of their documents end up in their kind of centralized commonplace. But now all of the documents can actually end up in there. And now when you go through closeout, you can go through and purge those thousands of documents that were sitting on people's machines, that were in email, that they stored on key drives, and actually know that those existed. So that's very common across a lot of these, where they're using it to facilitate their written policy. They're going to install it on every desktop, and every person will just start using it from there on out.
So this is a real opportunity for organizations to control digital sprawl, it would seem to me. You know,
yeah.
It's because storage is so cheap, no one really takes the time to think about, well, I'll just delete that. And the ability to manage that and clean that up in an automated fashion, that's a pretty powerful application.
We often hear stories as we talk to customers also about the side of, oh, this helps me understand if people are hoarding documents, because you always have like these document hoarders that are like, oh, I'll keep everything, even though they shouldn't. And you also, in many organizations, have the risk of information getting stolen, right, or getting leaked. And now you actually know who had access to that information. You know, you can't always protect everything, you know, that goes on out, but you're doing your best reasonable effort to make sure that you actually know what's happening on the edge of your organization for your most relevant information.
Tell me about the best phone call, email, thank you, O'Gram, you have ever received from someone who said, your product just did blank for me. I'm a spokesperson for life.
So I would say, so we're still early in the sales cycle. So all of those ones at the end of the customer cycle haven't come.
Okay.
But I would say this actually reduces the risk of what happens to us because we know we're going to get a subpoena. This is our best effort to make sure that our employees comply to that policy and we understand our risk when we go into any litigation type exercise.
It's a proactive, defensive tool for people in litigious areas is a real strong play for what
you're doing. That's right. And the litigious areas tend to be a lot of public companies, or they could be private companies, but still in highly regulated environments. So those guys who are highly regulated that have, you know, financial statements, or you think about your audit firm, right? Those guys have a very big responsibility on reporting and how they work with other companies.
Tell me about how you go to market with companies like that. I know in my career experience, I've dealt with selling sensitive technologies to companies. And so as the marketer, I'm trying to get people to talk in the public record all the time. And they're like, this stuff is great, but you can't quote us. How do you go to market when you're dealing with sensitive, you know, IP-based issues, proprietary secrets, and so forth? How do you reach out to these people and get their attention, and then how do you bring their voice back into your messaging?
That's actually exactly what we've been talking about lately, because the customer reference issue, when you're talking about things like this, is definitely a concern as you think about marketing that for those exact reasons. I don't want to be the guy that says, oh, you know, we have subpoenas coming at us, or we have issues that we need to manage risk. So our best way to date, and we're kind of building the momentum towards that, is to make sure that we have credibility elements in the market, such as research that we've done with people like CXO Publishing, which is the CIO magazine guys, and those kind of things. That we have analysts in both kind of industry and other segments that are, and industry influencers that are willing to talk about that. And then we already know we'll have to use a fair number of just generic case studies. So we try really hard to capture those stories people tell us. And even though we can't use those company names, still relate those stories across. Because as we go in, and almost every one of our meetings are with CIOs, when they pull in either their chief security officer or general counsel or their records managers. And you have credibility with those people as you can tell those same stories. You just don't get the benefit of having those names broadcast to the entire world.
Of saying, Acme did it this way.
Exactly.
And it saved them in this fashion.
So you do end up having to be a little bit more creative about how you leverage the type of content and drive prospects into the pipeline.
Narrative marketing.
Yes, very much so. You know, hence things like podcasts or blogs allow you to create better conversations about those issues than you can just, you know, put on a piece of paper that you're handing out to people.
That's a good segue. We're talking about social media here. Your next page, you know, I've followed next page a little bit, and you seem to be fairly avant-garde in terms of the social media tools that you use. Talk about that strategy.
I'm a huge believer in the fact that the new tools that are coming about really do enable conversations, things that are more authentic, where you can actually hear someone talk and you can feel their passion about a specific issue or what they care about. And it just creates so much more credibility and value for the person listening to it on the other end. Because no one reads brochures. I'm pretty convinced of that. We all still produce them because we're supposed to. But, you know, how many times?
Check off.
That's right. You pick those up, your sales guy hands them out, and no one reads those. They'd rather either go look at a demo, or in my world, I kind of view the social media tools into two sides. They're these ones that are all industry focused. Let's, you know, like we're doing. We're having a conversation about an issue in the market. And then there's other things that I view, like a collateral series is what I call them, where podcasts become also a way for me to help my sales guys get what we're talking about out to our customers. Because I would much rather send a five or 10 minute podcast with our CTO about our security than say, go read this 15-page white paper.
Oh, certainly.
And then it also becomes a tool like, oh, I'm headed into the security review. Oh, great. Listen to Tom talk to you about this. You can multitask, finish your email, and then you go in with an actual conversation about what's happened. And over time, I think the same thing will happen with, you know, we've actually done a couple with analysts, but we'll find the same thing to be true with customers that are willing to be referenceable, conversations with the CEO, and other exciting things or people that we run into along the way that are valuable for us not only to have relationships with, but other people to hear.
It's interesting. It seems to me the opportunity to expose people to the jargon of your space and the, like you say, the passion. Where I think it was Sue Sharman who talks about emotional bandwidth. That really comes through. Like you say, you know, in the printed word, you can't feel, you know, like we're talking about here, you're pretty passionate about this stuff. So, you know, very animated interview here. If we tied your hands up, I don't know if you can speak.
That's right. It's very hard.
But you get that, the emotional bandwidth thing, the jargon, the emotional bandwidth, you immerse them in your message, and you could do it in a relatively rapid fashion. I think that's really part of the great power of social media.
That's right. And it also seems to strip out some of the marketing-esque type of stuff that comes into printed material on the web or in a brochure.
You mean it's not seamlessly integrated?
That's right.
Into the management framework.
That's right. We didn't use robust and highly scalable. And, you know, that is something that happens, right? Things get written, oh, we should go that way. And it seems to be a lot more real as people can have conversations, create comments, and you create a community around those things.
Sydney, tell us where the listeners can go to learn more about NextPage and about what you're doing and how you can help them.
Absolutely. So obviously all of our information is on our website, nextpage.com. We actually also have a section on there where we post our podcasts, and we'll link over to this podcast once it gets up and available.
Pour them into your iPod.
That's right. Or your iTunes, whichever you prefer.
We've been speaking today with Sydney Tetrow, Vice President of Marketing for NextPage. Sydney, thanks for an awesome podcast.
Thanks, Kip.
This has been a Rocky Mountain Voices podcast. Visit us on the internet at www.rockymountainvoices.com.